Good evening. You know, my interest here, I'm just aware that we all have probably fairly a fair level of certainty, I think, often about our music. And my interest, again, I just want to emphasize, is not to take delight away, but to find the truest delight. And I'd like to start tonight with singing together, "Christ, We Do All Adore Thee." It's number 188. There's a verse that has impressed me recently as I've been studying in the Psalms. One thing, love that phrase, one thing. There's an awful lot said there. One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord. You know how it is when we capture a sunset, or we hear a phrase from a song that just grabs our hearts for a bit. Well, there's beauty there that grabs us. Well, who is, after all, the author of beauty? Let's stand together and sing 188. Let's pray. Remain standing, please. Lord, may that truly be our prayer, that we would desire one thing, and in desiring that one thing, that all our other desires would find their truest fulfillment for your honor and our delight. Amen. Be seated. Well, Oren talked about being stretched, and I assure you that I've had some real mental limbering exercises as I've been trying to get these talks ready. It has stretched me in significant ways, and I realize that I'm not done stretching here. And in a lot of ways, this is the toughest evening for me because we have to be honest about this. I think there's so much subjective in the musical side of things. We do have tastes that come to play. And yet, I am also convinced that there are objective things within the music that can be and must be discussed. So there is a sense in which beauty is in the eye of the beholder. We won't always have exactly the same tastes. And at the same time, let me present briefly this idea to you. That it is not completely subjective. It is not completely just my tastes against yours. Think about this. Do we believe that in the area of truth? You think one thing about reality, I think another thing about reality. We're probably both right. Or how can we tell? And yet we say, but there must be a standard of truth. Why? Because there is one who is truth. We readily acknowledge that, but not everybody does. Okay, so realize that that is not a given in everybody's mind. Secondly, in the realm of goodness, so think about the world of ethics, the world of behavior. We would all say, now it's just, now this, there might be just tinges of gray on this one for us. We would all say, yeah, of course there's a standard of behavior. There are things that are right and there are things that are wrong for us to do. But what is that standard of behavior rooted in? Your ideas? My ideas? If it's us against each other, we're going to have a hard time. What you find is even if somebody stomps on my toe deliberately, I say, hey, stop it. What am I appealing to? Is it just his ideas versus mine? I don't think so. I think I'm appealing to something outside of both of us that I'm saying, you shouldn't do that. I think I have some authority to tell him based on some authority outside of myself. Why? Because there is one who is good. So we agree on that generally, on truth and goodness. But, oh my goodness, right? When it comes to beauty now, well, you know, I mean, how can we really know anything? Okay, same way. Because there is one who is beautiful. And he is the standard of beauty. Now, not all is true in this world, not all is good, and not all is beautiful. And so in our art, we also need to be honest. The art has to have integrity. If it doesn't, it turns into kitsch. If all we do is bright shining lights in our art, whether it is paintings or music or whatever it is, all is happy. Well, that's false too. Okay? And at the same time, we have to remember that ultimately, he does reconcile all things to himself, and he puts all things to rights. That's his intent. And so the final word is not our brokenness. The final word is his redemption. And I think our art always has to, the body of our art always has to point in that direction. All right, so that's going to be a bit of our introduction into this part that is admittedly subjective, and yet let's firmly keep in mind there is one who is beautiful. And he forms the objective in this discussion. Tonight is the evening when we look at the music part specifically. And I've tried to set this up by arranging the week so that our first question is not dealing with the music, though it needs to be dealt with. Our first question is dealing with our own hearts. And to say, well, where really is my affinity? Am I guarding my loves? Because that is what Christ calls us to when he says, the first commandment is to consider your loves. Where is your heart aimed? And then we look to at those inner hungers that all of us have and recognize that there are different ways of filling those inner hungers. And then we looked also at the culture around us and recognized that, well, music is an expression of culture. It's people behind the music. It's not just something out there. There are ideas that are being transmitted here. There are perspectives. There are lifestyles. There are understandings that are being transmitted. And what does Jesus call us to in interacting with culture? And one of the things I was trying to emphasize there, so often our music listening is in reality fairly passive. Even if I'm tapping my foot, okay, I'm not calling that active engagement. It's fairly passive in terms of consider it versus a dialogue that you have with people where you're actively interacting with ideas and there's this back and forth. Music doesn't have that. It tends to be one way. It doesn't have to be entirely that way, but it tends toward that. So what is our mandate culturally? It's to be actively engaged in the world. And the thing that I was saying from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount was with salt and light, we are to be different from, but out among. Then last evening, we look at text, and that tends to be a little more objective because it does have some level of propositional content. But we don't have words and words that we can go to the dictionary and look up and argue about. Although even words have a certain level of subjectivity to them, particularly when you put them in poetry form. As some of you found, as you were looking at some of those texts last night, well, what is he saying here? I know what each word means, but when you string them together like that, I don't know what they mean. Well, there's a bit of that as well. So let me be silly here, because often the argument is, well, but what's the discussion when it comes to music? And typically it's said this way, well, music is amoral. Well, now we're back to the thing of morality, right? Right and wrong. And I'm just saying, well, is that going to be our most helpful thing? Is the only issue that we need to discuss is there a right and a wrong to music? And if we can determine that there's not, then what's the big deal? Let's go. Or if we can determine there is, then we can start the argument whether this particular piece of music is right or whether it's wrong. Well, okay, so let me be ridiculous with you here. Here's an A. Okay, let's take a quick vote. Is that a good or bad pitch? Good pitch? Bad pitch? Amoral pitch. I don't have much of a way. It hasn't communicated a whole lot to me. I don't really know if it's good or bad. I mean, I suppose it's good. I like the sound of that. I love the sound of a tuning fork. there we go. Would you agree with me in this? It hasn't communicated a whole lot. Now, if we begin to string some pitches together, can that communicate? Good, I'm seeing heads nodding. That's great. Let me show you how very, very simple stringing of pitches together communicates some different things. So just sing with me here. We're going to sing up the scale, starting on do, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Congratulations. But listen to the difference here. Start on la, and be careful when you get to your third note. Be careful, it wants to go too high. La, la, ti, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, sol, fa, mi, re, do, ti, la. How many of you would agree with me that something different was communicated between those two scales? Whew, good. All right. And then, just for the fun of it, we could even do this. La, ti, do, re, mi, fi, si, la, sol, fa, mi, re, do, ti, la, or la, ti, do, re, mi, fa, si, la, si, fa, mi, re, do, ti. Ooh, and then it gets flat out spooky. Just a scale! Now imagine what happens when we take the components of that scale and we begin to string it together into tunes. Then we really begin to communicate. Now, I may not be able to look at this and to create a paragraph to state precisely what's being communicated. So I can't look at that last scale that I sang to you and tell you that, well, it's Halloween night, and what's happening is there's a trick-or-treater walking up to the third door on Maple Street, and he's just about to knock, and there's somebody jump. I mean, of course not. There's just not that much propositional content in there. And yet we agree something different was communicated from the major scale. So it's not easy to talk intelligently about the musical side of things, but it is possible. And we're going to begin by talking, by bringing out different elements of music so that we have a certain vocabulary with which to deal with music. And the four elements I'm going to talk about, this isn't exhaustive, but it's kind of the four primary ones. One is pitch. Second one is rhythm. Third one is timbre, which I will define if you don't know it. I will define even if you do know it. Fourth is dynamics. Pitch, rhythm, timbre, dynamics. Well, with pitch, we need to start with melody. Now, I think it takes a bit of discernment to discern different qualities of a melody. Some melodies are tripping and merry. So, one you'll hear a little later this evening is, I love the mountains, I love the daffodils, da 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 dum ba da 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 dum ba. And you hear how it's kind of like a child tripping along in a meadow. I think you would agree with me that it's not a particularly somber tune. Is that a yes? Oh, good. Okay. So even though we don't know, we can't put specific things to that melody, yet it immediately gives us a certain mood. It gives a certain sense about it. Some melodies are majestic. We're going to look at this one in a moment here, Crown Him with Many Crowns. I think that is a majestic melody. Some are interesting melodies. Some are dull. And I hope I don't step on too many toes. I'm gonna talk later about the little praise chorus, "Lord, I lift your name on high." I find that one fairly dull, particularly the verse. I know now you're playing inside your head, right? We'll look at it later. Some have great form, so they have this kind of climax and resolution. And I'd like to just look at one now, and that is "Crown him with many crowns." So here's the A phrase, "Crown him with many crowns, the Lamb upon his throne." And then the B phrase. And now when I say A and B, what I mean there is musically what's going on. So textually, all of them are different. But musically, we have two distinct phrases here. And then to my ear, there's a short C phrase. And again, to my ear, there's a short C prime phrase. Now, C prime means it's like the C phrase, only slightly different. And then we come back with a D phrase. Now, one of the things I found intriguing about these phrases is look what happens at the end of each phrase. So the first one ends on re, next one on so, and then la, and then ti. You see how each phrase sequentially is ending a little bit higher and higher, and so, of course, we expect a resolution back to do. Well, I find that kind of fascinating. I know I'm kind of a music geek, and yet I want to show you how the phrases, just melodically speaking, the phrases are doing a lot. There's a lot packed into this little song. Well, take note of this. We're in the key of E, but look what happens here. There's just a hint of B major at the start of the second phrase, for the first half of the second phrase. And then, oh, help. That was one that didn't happen last night. And then, in the C prime phrase, there's a hint of F sharp. And for those of you who like me, enjoy the kind of weird theory things, what you see is it's progressing by fifths through there, E to B, and then B to F sharp. And I just find this fascinating. Now with that little bit, would you join me in singing the first verse of "Crown Him with Many Crowns"? Ooh, and actually, let's go ahead and just do it on the melody, just so you see what's happening melodically there. Everyone on melody. "Crown Him with many crowns, the Lamb upon his throne. Hark how the heavenly anthem drowns our music but its own. Awake, my soul, and sing of him who died for me. So in my books, it's a very interesting melody, which doesn't necessarily mean you find it interesting, but I do think the melody is interesting. Contrast that with, and again, it's stacked. I pulled out the worst one I could think of just on the spur of the moment. And the chorus does get better, I think, than this, but the verse I find rather mundane. So we have an A phrase on the first phrase, "Lord, I lift your name on high." Lord, I lift your name on high. And then we have an A prime phrase. It's a little bit different. Lord, I love to sing your praises. So a little bit different. And then we go back to the A phrase. And then we go back to the A prime phrase. And you can see why when I contrast the two, I say, well, really, this is kind of drab. I mean, even the first phrase doesn't grab me, but then you repeat it. And the fourth time it comes around, I feel like I know what's going on. That is melody. Then, when you add more pitches in, obviously we have harmony. Now, one of the things, harmony can be, is of course very lush, and we've grown up with it so much so that I think we almost don't hear it sometimes. But harmony is not always lush. Sometimes it is dissonant. So let's sing up to so, and then on the way back down, you stop on any pitch on the way down from so to fa to mi to re to do. And just listen to that a little bit. So we sing unison up to so, and on the way back down, you just step off the bus at any of those pitches that you wish to. Do, do, re, mi, fa, so, la. Sorry, and we're just going to start at, stop at so. So, so, fa, mi. And I think it's safe to say we have some element of dissonance there. I think it's safe to say some of you are squirming just a little bit right now with that. Well, what does dissonance do? That was very crude dissonance, okay? But when it's well done, dissonance adds interest. It adds a certain amount of tension and restlessness into the music. So there's this sense of unrest. But my question is now, well, is tension evil? Well, I don't think so. Can it be overdone? I think so. Do we feel that? Do we sense that in our Christian walks? Absolutely. But again, I think the large story of creation informs this. And that is that, yes, there is tension, but ultimately there is redemption. And I think all of our music needs to move, recognize the brokenness again, but always move toward pointing at least toward ultimate rest. We'll come back to this idea when we get to rhythm. I'd like to give you a couple of examples of the first one being one of my favorite melodies, but just to speak about how a melody can have incredible interest. Now, this also has harmony with it, but this is from Rachmaninoff's Vocalese. Rachmaninoff is a Russian composer. And note the incredible interest that is in this melody and how it speaks something distinctly different from than the one that we'll listen to next. Bring back memories from something, maybe from something that's yet to come. Contrast that with Schoenberg. Schoenberg is a German composer. Help, is he Swiss? I don't remember. I'm sorry. But he's from the Germanic family at any rate. And he speaks of the emancipation of dissonance, which what he means there is the freedom from needing to resolve tension. So he feels like the tension shouldn't need resolution. And you might capture just a bit of that in this melody. Go ahead, you may laugh if you want. I think you'll agree that there is something very different being communicated between the two melodies. And again, we may not be able to quantify precisely what it is, but there's a vast difference. And I suspect we could spend quite a while talking about how it affects us differently. Schoenberg says this, and you might recognize this in his music, there is only one greatest goal toward which the artist strives to express himself. Wow. That's pitch. Let's look now, secondly, at rhythm. Rhythm is the backbone of music. So you can have intelligible rhythms. Okay, I know that was pitched. I can't speak without any pitch, but it was basically unpitched. But if I try to do pitch without rhythm, it doesn't really communicate much, except maybe a wailing or something. So I'm going to say that rhythm is the backbone of music. It's incredibly physical. And this isn't something I say just for these talks, okay? This is something I tell my choirs all the time. In fact, I use the body to teach rhythm precisely because rhythm is so incredibly physical. It's good. That's the way God has made us. But I also want to point out, because this is probably the most controversial area when it comes to this whole music talk. So let's relax the fists now and let's see what we can do with this. Just a quick thing from creation. I love the first couple chapters of Genesis. I love the creation account. I think it says so much to us about what we are intended to do creatively. Because again, we see God the artist at work there. And one of the things we learn is that he creates boundaries. So he creates, just one example, a boundary for the waters. When those boundaries are not honored, we have floods. And floods become destructive. I think the same is true in our own creating. We need to respect certain boundaries. We're not always going to agree about exactly where those boundaries are, but we better agree that there are boundaries. Because that is a basic principle of creativity. There have to be boundaries. Otherwise, there's no work of art possible. Rhythm is the same way. Enough said about that for now. So let's talk about syncopation. First is, it's not evil. How does it work? Syncopation is a departure from the normal order. Okay, I'm just telling you basic, just kind of the basic nuts and bolts of how syncopation works. It is a departure from the normal order. I see it as similar to the way jokes work. Jokes work because there's this kind of predictable outcome, and all of a sudden it takes this crazy twist that you didn't anticipate. And that twist strikes you as funny. If everything were completely predictable, there's no joke. But if everything is twist, well, it can't be, because there has to be the predictable. There has to be the expected outcome for the joke to work, for the twist to work. Well, in the same way with syncopation, there has to be the predictable. The 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. For the unaccented beat to make any sense. So in the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 1, and 3, and 4. Okay, so that's what you know now, what the predictable thing is, and the other starts doing just a little bit of this to it. Dissonance functions in rhythm the same, sorry, dissonance functions in harmony the same way that syncopation functions in rhythm. It adds tension. It adds a bit of unrest. It adds energy. It adds excitement. But like harmony, I'm going to argue that at some point it has to come back to a point of rest. I think we have something like syncopation. So again, syncopation is when you emphasize the offbeat. Let's just go ahead and count with me. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Doom, doom. Doo, doo, doom. Doom, doom. Doom, doo, doom. Doo, doo. Doo, doo. Doo, doo. Doo. Okay, so you get the idea. All right. And see, okay, I love syncopation. I just think it's so much fun. Can it go overboard? Yes. We have something. I said this isn't just for the young. Well, here is where I think it hits maybe the older generation. We have something, I think, very similar to syncopation in dotted rhythms. Let me explain what I mean here. Dotted rhythms also highlight the same offbeat, just less strongly. Would you get that set going? I've written up the words for you underneath the notes. So you'll just go one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four. One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one. Two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four. One and three and 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 one. When the trumpet of the Lord shall sound and time shall be no more and the dawning breaks eternal bright and fair. Thank you. And that's what that rhythm looks like then. So again, I'm not suggesting that dotted rhythms are evil any more than I'm suggesting that syncopated rhythms are evil. I am suggesting they are related to each other. I think dotted rhythms are like syncopation at 15 miles an hour. Similar, way toned down, and yet I think it has a similar effect. And I'm going to argue that especially the gospel songs, the older gospel songs, tend to be created with lots of dotted rhythms. And that's what gives them their appeal. Not the only thing, but I think that's a significant part of what gives them their appeal. Why do I bring this up? I bring this up because I think we shouldn't pick out only syncopation as our whipping post. I love the energy and excitement that syncopation gives. It gives me a buzz, not unlike, for some people apparently, a good cup of coffee. But syncopation can be addictive. Anything that gives us a buzz, anything that makes us feel good, can be addictive. And like all addictions, it promises more and more. And it delivers less and less. So like all addictions, to keep getting the same buzz, you have to keep turning it up. I think that a simplistic definition of rock is still helpful in that. I mean, there are a couple of things that make the kind of the classic rock definition. One is timbres of the electric guitars, the electric guitar and bass. The other is the syncopation that's built into it. That's not exclusive to rock by any means, but it is one of the trademarks of rock. But again, we have to recognize that not all rock is created equal, and some is much more strongly syncopated than others than other pieces are. And yet the tendency is to draw us, in, I think, increasingly into what is rhythmic and syncopated, to where the rhythm becomes the main feature, and it becomes the thing that drives it. And we'll look at that a little more later. But I think we just need to be aware that that is the simple facts of it. It does give us a buzz. Things that can give us a buzz are addictive. And that doesn't mean that just because something is potentially addictive, we shouldn't have any of it. It means that we better be alert and be aware of what's going on and probably have some kind of healthy mistrust of ourselves. I also mentioned dotted rhythms because I think these can be maybe like coffee, mildly addictive. Maybe coffee isn't mildly addictive, I don't know. But I do think dotted rhythms can be mildly addictive. And I think we need to be careful about that as well. Timbre is spelled T-I-M-B-R-E, timbre. It is the tone. It's what lets you know Joe's voice from Julian's, because there's a different timbre. It's not just a matter of pitch. There's a different timbre. It's what lets you know a saxophone from a trumpet. Tone communicates something. You know how Amazing Grace usually goes. Does it say the same thing this way? Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. Well, I'm seeing some chuckles happening over here. Apparently, it doesn't communicate exactly the same thing. Timbre communicates something as well. Listen to the timbre of voices and instruments. Those do communicate a great deal. And I'm not talking just about screamo music. Listen to the timbres For instance, the two pieces that I played for you here, the timbre of that violin, Itzhak Perlman, very different from the timbre of the soprano that was singing the Schoenberg. Let me give you a couple of examples here. Pressed or strident timbre. So when we are tense or angry, we get a certain sound in our voice. And you can sometimes tell when somebody's really trying hard to keep some emotion in check. Different from our normal speaking timbre. Which is more appropriate for this kind of timbre? Honey, honey, I'll never leave you. Will that be paper or plastic? Could you hear that? Sorry. Will that be paper or plastic? Breathy tends to be, it's not always, but it tends to be intimate. I think the reason for that is because breathy is, maybe I'm overanalyzing this. This is Wendell says it's free for all, free for nothing. Breathy tends to be intimate, I think, because it emulates whispering. And of course whispering is intimate because you have to be close to each other to be able to hear a whisper. That's my opinion. I don't know if I'm right. That's timbre. Timbre also communicates. Fourthly, dynamics. Dynamics is simply how loud and soft it is. I have found that some music compels you to turn it up, to hear it, to experience it. You've got to feel it. You've got to crank it up. Sometimes I enjoy that, but it's not particularly conducive to quietness and thoughtfulness and meditation. Listening to that kind of music quietly is out of character with it. I suggest that you not make a steady diet of that. Again, because as Christians, we're called to be thoughtful, contemplative, not meaning we're never filled with energy, not that, but that I think our basic posture toward life is not to be pounded, but to be thoughtful. So in choral music, I look for dynamic variation. I want seasons of energy, seasons of restfulness, excitement, and meditation. One dynamic level is deficient artistically. By the same token, all soft is boring and passive. I don't want that either. But all loud gives us no room for the thoughtfulness that we're called to. I would like to embark now, having given those couple of things, embark on some listening now to the music. But let me first just open it up and just see, are there any, and I think I should probably say quick, questions, responses that you would like to offer at this point before we go into the next section. Great, then let's go on. Would you pull out your questions? I had a set of questions last night for text. This evening I have a similar set for music. You may want to, I think you have lyrics as well. We'll be looking first at I Love the Mountains. We'll begin with verse 2 of this, and I'm just going to play a rather short clip of each of these to give us a flavor of what it's like. Is there anybody who's missing a handout and would like one? Hands up high. Over here. What I will do is I'm going to do a super quick run through of these questions. I will grant you again that this is not entirely objective. I'm trying to demonstrate the process, not demonstrate the ultimate right answers. And yet, I think we need to be looking for the best answers for this that we can find. Let's embark. Preview. This is live. I think it's through a camera microphone. I deeply apologize. It's the community choir that we did last spring, and it has children in it as well as adults. So it's a horrible recording, and I'm very sorry about that. Now you can assume that the choir was really amazing, right?
I love the children.
Running down now through the questions here, how would I describe melody and harmony? Well, I think the melody is just kind of a rollicking melody. I don't see it as particularly profound, but jolly, skipping sort of melody. Rhythm is energized. It has lots of dots to it. I don't think the rhythm's the primary thing, but it sure is a significant thing here. It just wouldn't have the same if you wouldn't have boom diada boom diada. Boom diada boom diada. It just doesn't say the same thing. Do the timbre of instrument and voices agree with the text? How does it affect the message? The timbre is just a bit immature, and the children sort of augment that. More training for children and adults alike would be great, but it is what it is. It's folksy, and I think that part of it works super well. Dynamic variation, a bit, yeah. There is some, and I think there's more in if we were to hear the whole song. Anything particular about the music that sticks out? It's not particularly deep, but it has kind of the sense of this informal neighborhood, y'all come, front porch singing jam session, which that I find rather charming, but I have a weakness for that kind of thing. Evaluate. What emotions does it evoke? I think happy. I think there's sort of an aliveness to this. It's major, not minor. Dotted, it has a bouncy melody. I suppose the timbres, we could argue, evoke just a touch of sadness that there's not more training happened yet. But other than that, I think it's fine. Looking at style of musical presentation and appropriate for the words, I think so. It seems to line up to me. Is this a song I'm inclined to prefer it to a point. I know that, how does it affect the way I hear the song? Well, I hear the song through rose-tinted earbuds, and so I'm sure I don't hear it accurately. I know these people, and so I'm not entirely unbiased with this. Do I like the words but not the musical presentation? Somewhat. I explained that before, that I think the musical presentation could be stronger, but yet I think the composition is strong, even if the performance is not highly strong. And I think, by the way, that it's valid to make a distinction between that. You know, what about the composition? What about the performance? Those are two things that are valid to look at separately. Do I like the musical presentation of the song but not the words? Again, the composition, it's a great arrangement, and it really augments the playfulness of it with all the playfulness that's already built into the song. Is it interesting or creative? I think the changing textures that Wendell Glick has, and you didn't hear much of it, but he's got lots of changing textures, children in, children out, voices building one voice, and then two voices and three, and that adds a great deal of interest to it. And then there are cross rhythms between the choirs. Doom, doo-doom, 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 ba-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da, doo-doo. So all of that adds, I think, a significant interest. Overall message in agreement with biblical description of reality? I think so. I don't think there's any particular conflict. I would not call this particularly profound, and yet I think there's no particular conflict either. Acting, what can I learn? Maybe a fresh perspective, a fresh childlike perspective, just the delight. Again, I don't think it's anything that's going to leave me saying, wow, I just had a deep thought today. Would I recommend this song? Yes or no? Yes and no. For some choral settings, some schools, absolutely. People who enjoy a folksy kind of music, sure, I would recommend. I wouldn't put it super high on a list particularly. Is it a song that encourages Christian maturity? Yes and no, I think. Yes, in that I think we should practice basking in the simple delights of life. No, in that I wouldn't particularly want a steady diet of this. But again, I think it's good. Is the body of work from this musician or group of musicians worth supporting financially? Would you buy more of their albums? Yes, yes, yes. There will be a sheet going around starting at the... How often should you listen to or sing this song? I don't think it'll probably hold up to frequent repetitions. I don't think it's one that the children will sing all year long at school. And yet I think within in its own right, it's solid. That's my take on that one. Rolling in the Deep.
get me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out and I'll lay your ship bare. See how I'll leave with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do. There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch and it's bringing me out the dark. The scars of your love remind me of us. They keep me thinking that we almost had it all. The scars of your love, they leave me breathless. I can't help feeling we could have had it all.
My guess is that had a different effect on you from the first one. If this is a fairly foreign sound to you, let me say, in all fairness, I think you're getting a very mild version of it because of the sound system here. It's just the way it is. Also, I will just say that the selections I have chosen for you, again, I don't know, I think we're all over the map here, but I think the selections I've chosen for you, you know, if the first song is over here to really tame, and this is really wild, whatever really wild is defined as, I'm going to say in terms of what is out there between tame and wild, I'm going to put this somewhere over here. This is relatively mild compared to what is out there. So I'm trying to give you just a bit of a perspective on where we are here. Briefly, I hope, describing the melody, I find the melody very primal. If you just sing the melody, there's something kind of guttural about it. It's not a charming melody. It's interesting less for itself and more for its visceral kind of drive. The harmony in this particular song is I think, almost non-existent. There's that driving bass, but there's not a lot of harmony. The rhythm is, I'm going to say, dominating. It starts at the very beginning, boom, 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 and it continues to grow throughout. By the way, on this one, there wasn't a whole lot of syncopation. There was a little bit, but mostly it was just a strong beat on every one of the normal four. Timbre, does it agree with the text? Absolutely. I think her timbre really drives this text forward and works well with this. Dynamic variation, not much. Do the dynamics affect the message? Yes. I think that the dynamics want to be loud, and I think they augment it. Anything particular about the music that sticks out? It's driving. There's just energy there, and that is what particularly sticks out to me. Emotions? I think the primary emotion that I sense just listening to the music without particular reference to the words is intensity, is the sense that I get. The melody is angular. It's very repetitive, and it's a pretty angular melody. The harmony is fairly sparse. The rhythm is driving. The timbre is not lush. Precisely. Dynamics, I think, tend to be fairly loud. Appropriate, is the style of musical presentation appropriate? I think so, for the words of this song. I think the musical presentation and the words of the song go well together. I think they complement each other well. Is this a song you're inclined either to prefer or not to prefer, and how does this affect the way you hear this song? Well, here's my confession. My initial hearing of this song was a week or two ago, and I was initially, my initial take was, yuck, just don't care for it, thank you very much. As I heard it more, because I listened to it a number of times, and the more I heard it, the more I said, you know, there's something here that is compelling. And I couldn't quite put my finger on what that something was, but I did find myself compelled. And I think it's something about the heart cry that's here in this song. She handles her voice well. It's not my favorite timbre because, again, I'm classically trained, and yet she handles her voice very well. And within the genre, it has integrity. On the other hand, right? I listen to it and I look at the text and I say, well, do I prefer it? Well, so I have this mix of prefer, not prefer. Do I like the words of this song? I think I've already sort of said ENF. Let's keep going here. I've already addressed G some. I think there's a lot of repetition here. I don't think it's highly imaginative. I don't think highly imaginative is the point in this song. How is the overall message of this song in agreement with the biblical description of reality? How is it in conflict? I think it's primarily in conflict because I think this doesn't appeal particularly to our nobler instincts. I think, this is my opinion, I think it appeals to our baser instincts. However, I have to give this. Text and music work together beautifully well. And I do think that it does describe well relational poverty outside of a scriptural understanding of reality. Act. Okay. The big question for me here is one of two basic approaches. One is it feeding me? Remember Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Well, there's something about walking in the counsel of the ungodly that has a very different net effect on us than walking in the counsel of Torah. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, Torah. Well, I don't think I can honestly say that this is godly counsel. We looked at the text last night, and I have to say, I think it's ungodly counsel. Okay, let's just be frank about it. And I think the scriptures are pretty plain about what needs to happen with ungodly counsel. I think there are two ways of listening to it. One is a way that feeds me. That's the Psalm 1 way, the counsel of the ungodly. Another way is Paul's way in the Areopagus, where he understands the art of the pagan world. I think there's legitimacy to hearing this, to understand what is happening in the pagan world, and to develop an empathy and the ability, like Paul, to communicate with them. But again, I don't think the fourth and the seventh and on times is on this side. I think that comes to the place where it is now feeding me, and it's not a tapping into a better level of understanding of the pagan world. That is my perspective on it. Would I recommend this song? Generally not. And what I've just described tells you why. I don't think it's a song that encourages Christian maturity. Would I buy more of their albums? No. How often should you listen to this song? I think rarely. Maybe when you're preparing your music talks. But in my opinion, it's not particularly helpful in the Christian walk. Last song. Sam Smith. I had a couple of people talk to me about my take on the text, and I think you're right, and I think I was wrong. I was using the term like ex and lover, and the lyrics don't bear this out, where he talks about a one-night stand there. And in fact, I went and looked just a little bit further, and this is a quote that is attributed to him about the context in which he wrote the song. The song is about the moment in the morning after a one-night stand where the person you are with leaves your house and you are left by yourself. And it's just a second where you're just like, I wish, I wish. You don't even love them. You don't really fancy them that much. It's just nice to have someone in the bed next to you. Let's listen.
Guess it's true, I'm not good at a one-night stand. But I still need love, cause I'm just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave, will you hold my hand? Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all I need. This ain't love, it's clear to see. But darling, stay with me.
Running down through these questions, this is again my response to it. How would I describe the melody and harmony? I think it's plaintive melody. There's a certain longing that's there. It's fairly repetitive. The initial melody is basically A-A-B-A. And yet there's something I find attractive about it, particularly when he gets to that B section. It does something to me. The rhythm in the genre is pretty understated. Does the timbre agree with the text? The voice is intimate. I think that voice works well with this text, because it's a very intimate text. He uses a deliberate kind of voice cracking in there, and again, that whole effect augments this sense of intimacy as well. Dynamic variation, it's just not a big deal here. I don't think there's a whole lot. But it doesn't strike me as one that just wants to just demands that you just crank it up. And I think it gives a little bit more room for contemplation. What sticks out to me is musically is that it is understated, and it's more inviting than pushy. Evaluating the emotions, I think, are wistful. Is a lot of what I hear there. I think the musical presentation is appropriate. Again, the words are very emotional. The musical presentation is very emotional. Is it a song I'm inclined to prefer or not prefer? I don't know how to answer this. I'm kind of in the middle in terms of just my initial attraction to it. There's a part of me that likes it. There's a part of me, particularly as I think more about it, that says, I'm not sure. So I don't find myself highly motivated emotionally to either bash it or applaud it. Do I like the words but not the musical presentation? Well, I don't like the words, but I think they do portray hurt and loneliness really well. I think they portray a feeling lost quite well. Do I like the musical presentation of the song but not the words? I like the thoughtfulness of the music. It is inviting, I think. Is the music interesting or creative? I don't think it's, again, highly imaginative. I think the interest is primarily, and I don't remember if we heard it in this clip or not, there are occasional vocal gymnastics. He sings it quite well. There are occasional vocal gymnastics. That adds a good deal of interest. And then there's a variation of texture. Sometimes instruments drop out. And there's also the words, just this kind of pleading that's there that I think adds a lot of interest. How is the overall message of this song in agreement or disagreement with the biblical message? And the thing I said last night is, even though the music doesn't portray what we would consider this driving lust, or what we would tend to associate with that, yet the words, when we look at how you define lust biblically, the words fit that definition. Because we have this thing of, you are all I need. And there's this incredible emptiness. And again, I want to say, let's be careful to not find ourselves completely in either camp of being revolted or embracing. Let's think, what is a third way of Jesus' way? And I think Jesus' way is compassionate love, of understanding it and shunning what needs to be shunned, and yet loving where loving is called for. What can you learn from this song and songwriter? Again, I think empathy with brokenness. It's a very different approach to broken relationships from Adele in Rolling in the Deep. Would I recommend this song? No. And we talked about that last time. Is it a song that encourages Christian maturity? I think that the mentality of this song is antithetical to Christian understanding of love and marriage and relationships. I just don't think there's any other way that we can read it with honesty. Would I buy their albums? No. Would I listen to it? Rarely, I think. That is just a bit of a sample of how this process might work. Is it work? Yes, it is indeed. But I think I think it is incumbent on us, and maybe I'll just leave this with you in parting. If you're going to buy, let's say, a jet, you better plan on that it's a highly complex instrument or tool. And you better plan on taking a good bit of time to learn to drive that jet. Or else it could be real trouble for you. And that's just kind of a bad analogy of if you are spending a lot of time in music, which I'm going to say is a fairly complex thing, the more time you spend in it, the more responsibility you have to sort through the issues. If you're not spending a whole lot of time in it, you probably have a lower level of responsibility to sort through the issues. If you're spending a lot of time in it, you need to invest some serious mind work and prayer work to sort through the issues. I think it's that important. And with that, I guess I will leave you for now, and we'll take a brief break and try to be back here in 5 minutes. And Oren, maybe you can give us our instructions then from there. Thank you so much.
long. It'll be four songs. What can we do? Oh. Well, you know, I don't know. This is going to be a little tough, so I don't know. Maybe 7 minutes is okay.
And just go with 7 minutes. And to say, use the questions as a basic guide, but don't go down through this.
Okay.
All right, are there announcements that should be made? Anyone have an announcement? Okay, Harry?
I keep forgetting to end this way, so I'll start this way. We really appreciate your caring, concern, and prayers for Mervyn and for the family. Mm-hmm. Got a text from May this morning. Dad came home last evening. He had a good long night's sleep, up and perky this morning.
Well, good.
10 minutes later, she had called the ambulance. He was unresponsive. He's in the hospital now.
Oh, my word.
Keep praying.
Okay.
I made an announcement some time back, fairly recently, about a Dale and Rebecca, what was it? Yeah. Anyhow, they have a last name. And they had received a very vile threat, money or else, and had a series of things that would happen if they didn't come up with the money. They have now received their third threat, and the last name is Eby, I believe. Anyhow, and they have this warning and this threat: if there is not a response, there will likely be bloodshed. And so let's pray for them. They're a young couple with one child. They did say that the neighbors were trying to keep pretty close watch on what was going on. Uganda.
Okay. All right, anyone else? Okay, Wendell will have a few instructions for us in just a moment. We'll go to the same place that we did last evening, except for the ones that normally go out in the classrooms out on the outside. Come to the basement so you can hear it across the speakers, and I guess you teachers will just have to kind of decide whether numbers, you know, warrant just putting a couple of together, or you'll just scatter out in the basement. Otherwise, go where you went last evening for the. And for those of you that are visitors, just join your neighbor. This is the Sunday school class division for center.
First thing is, this will run past 9 o'clock, as Warren indicated, and I want you to feel entirely free to just go home and get a good night of sleep, if that is what is best for you. That's a serious offer there. Tomorrow, we are having a song leading worship session here for anybody who is interested. The first session will be on what is the shape of worship. So where does the singing fit into the worship service? What should the worship service look like? And again, that's open to anybody who would be interested in participating in that. 3 o'clock here. Second session will then be on leading singing interpretively. And so we should be finished by 5 o'clock, I think, unless there's really vigorous discussion. And that will be entirely up to you. Secondly, there is, I think, in the back a sheet. I didn't say nearly, believe it or not, nearly all of what I would have liked to here. And there's a sheet that I've printed up to try to give some instructions, some ideas about how to flesh out the musical discernment. And Stephen, are those in the back? Over where? Go ahead.
Okay,
great. So I think the fasting, the music fast sheet is there as well. So please feel free, if you are interested in a little more on this, to interact with those. And finally, just thanks. It has been a real pleasure to be here with you. I said finally, sorry. One more finally. And that is, if there are people from classes, this is not required. I know it's going to go late, but if there are people from classes who would like to report here, I'd love to hear if there'd be somebody from each class who'd want to. Not obligated, but teachers, you might want to mention that. And Janine and I will probably be leaving about 10 o'clock since we have a family obligation at that point. So I say that because last night it went a bit after 10. I think we are ready to dismiss. Thank you. Oh, I should just mention that because of the time, I'm going to try to be precisely 7 minutes on each song. And that includes about a one-minute excerpt. So use the questions just as guides, and you're going to have to just kind of fly over them, and just it's going to be a high flyover. Thank you.
And our thanks to you for this week.
Yes, you're welcome.
Okay, you're dismissed.